The RMB was overvalued. When the RMB is, now RMB is, there was no black, no longer black market for RMB, for US dollar now. Right? Because the RMB is undervalued, everybody wants to buy RMB. Right? If you, it's very easy to get US dollar either from the government, from the commercial banks, or from the non-official market. Right? But in the old days, U.S. dollar was very expensive. Was very expensive. Even in the long term after, quite a long term, a few years after the 1996 laws were adopted. So how could this happen? How could you make money in this if you? Let's say, if you don't have real transactions, you can falsify documents. Because what the Foreign Exchange Administration is called SAFE, right? State Administration for Foreign Exchange, and what the commercial banks do, they don't check whether you have real transactions. They don't check whether you have real transactions. They just check whether the documents are authentic or not. That's the only thing you do. Right? If you are skillful enough, and if you have the technology, you can falsify invoice, you can falsify those documents needed in international sales transactions. So what you need to obtain is an invoice, and you need a bill of exchange. You need selling goods, you need a bill of lading, right? You need a qidan. And sometimes you need a certification from the Chinese embassy, Chinese consular in foreign countries. All those documents can be falsified. Even a diploma, diploma of Harvard University can be falsified. Everything can be falsified. Right? So you can make false documents, and then you present the documents to the commercial banks, and commercial banks will sell you U.S. dollar. That's the official rate. If the official rate was the official rate was $1 to 8.27 for a long time. If the black market was 9 or 10 or 11, then you can make a profit out of this. You can buy from the government at 8.27 and then sell to the black market at $9 or 10 or 11. That's what a lot of people made money in 1990s, right? So you understand the process, and this could be used together with letter of credit frauds, letter of credit frauds, because letter of credit is also needed in international trading goods.
For example, when I was in STTU in charge of this kind of thing, when we invite Nobel Prize laureates, and the student fee is very high, and I'm in charge of STTU to make the exchange in the Bank of China.
There's a limitation. What's the legal basis for the limitation? I need to check the law. And because for salary of contractors, in theory, salary should be the payment for services. Services, so that should belong to current account transactions. There shouldn't be any restrictions. But we need to check the 1996. 这个您可以去查一下，看看劳务的收入是怎么计算的，因为它这个算劳务收入嘛，对吧？
劳务收入按照长期工作的只有百分之七十的回馈，
是吧？
另外，对于像大型国企，
就是明显的规避法律了，明显的是规避法规了。去应该去查一下那个结汇受汇的有关规定，因为劳务的收入应该属于服务贸易的一个范畴啊，应该属于服务贸易，而服务贸易应该在广义上属于这个经常账户的支出了嘛，对吧？而且中国已经接受了这个第八条的义务，接受第八条义务你就不应当对服务贸易施加任何的限制，对吧？ 那比如说像我们，像那个，比如说你在，对于，举个例子，比如说你是一个外企的老总，你的收入，这个里，你的收入那么不管多高，你都是可以汇出去的，都是可以汇出去的，对吧？啊，这个是应该不应该有规定的，不应该有禁止的。而且呢，你在对一个外企来说，我这个外企，比如说微软在中国投资一个公司，不管我挣多少钱，我都是可以汇出去的。 都是可以汇出去的，对吧？按照第八条第二款的规定，因为 profit from investment 应该是属于经常账户的一部分，这个是非常清楚的，对吧？那非常清楚的，所以在中国不对他们的不对外商投资者的不对外商投资者的叫什么这个 profit 不对外商投资者的我们外商投资法里面叫什么？不对他们的投资所得是吧？还是叫那个。利润对啊，对它的利润的汇出不加任何限制，实际上也是第八条第二款的一个规定，规定的一个体现，对吧？你不能够对它加以，但是实际上中国在接受出于对外商投资的，出于吸引外资，实际上在我们在1996年接受这个条款以前，中国已经不加限制，已经不加，从八十年代的时候就不加限制，但是它最基础的来源实际上是这条，因为。 它的利润应当是属于它对那个是它投资的那个收入嘛，投资的收益是不能够限制的，是第八条的一个规定，好吧？那么那个second prohibitions avoidance of discriminatory currency practices and what does this mean? Does this mean this the member states are not allowed to practice multiple currency? Multiple exchange rates. How does this work? How does multiple exchange rates work? Why there multiple exchange rates? Well, multiple means more than one, right? So a country for one foreign currency, now we only have one exchange rate, one official exchange rate, right? For US dollar, now it's 6.8, right? And for euro, for British pound, and for Vietnam, they call it Vietnam tong, right? For every foreign currency, you only have one official exchange rate. This is the situation today, but many years ago, in 1970s, even in early 1980s, in 1960s, a number of countries practiced multiple exchange rates, even including UK and France. For example, the UK to British sterling pound, right? It was one current to between British sterling pounds and US dollar. Right? For some transactions, there is one official exchange rate. For some other transactions, you have another exchange rate. So between British sterling pounds and US dollar, you have two or even three or even a number of exchange rates. What's the purpose of this? For preventing speculation or for the purpose of speculating. Encourage speculation. Why would the government encourage? So you mean for those countries who, assuming a country has multiple currency, multiple exchange rates, that's because the government wants to encourage speculation. That's actually, to a certain extent, that's an industrial policy. That's an industrial policy. Let's say if the government wants to encourage export and discourage import, how could multiple exchange rates have. Encourage exports, right? So the multiple exchange rates arrangements could be used as the industrial policy to encourage exports and discourage imports.
Overvalue the foreign currency.
Overvalue the foreign currency to do what?
Encourage export and discourage import.
So you can have actually two exchange rates, right?
Yeah.
For the exporting industry, you give them a cheaper exchange. So it's in order to for the exporting industry, you give them an kind of undervalued foreign exchange, undervalued domestic currency, right? For the importing industry, you give it overvalued, right? Overvalued foreign currency. For example, if it is undervalued, then you can tell the exporters, if you let's see between Chinese yuan and the U.S. dollar, you can tell if the Chinese government wants to encourage exports, it can tell the exporters that export as much as possible, because for every dollar you earn, and there's official market here, right, 1 to 6.8, but if you export more, you get a lot of US dollars, I will buy your US dollar at a much higher price, And for the importers, you do the reverse. If you want to sell your U.S. dollar to us, sorry, if you want to, you have to buy U.S. dollar from us, right? And from the government to buy foreign goods, right? I will sell you at a very high price, right? So to discourage export, right? The government can also use multiple exchange rates arrangement to discourage, for example, consumption for luxury goods, right? For luxury goods, for very expensive cars, or for the ladies, for the so-called Reebok, LV, I call it Reebok. If you do not want your people to buy LV those stuff Prada from foreign countries, you can just import LV bags from France. Is it France French product or Italian product? Yeah, French. If you buy LV from France and you present the invoice to us for this kind of stuff, the dollar I sell to you, the euro I sell to you will be very expensive. Will be very expensive, right? And for the kind of, we call it capital goods, right? If you buy technology and if you buy machines, equipments, which China badly needs, then you can have a much cheaper rate, right? We sell euro to you at a very cheaper rate. So country can use discriminatory or called multiple exchange rates to implement industrial policies, and now this is prohibited. This is prohibited by the IMF. You cannot do it. So that's the exchange rates obligations under the IMF, and China accepted it. A number of countries accepted this obligation in 1996. And the most recent, addition to this is the Vietnam. Vietnam accepted Article 8 obligation in 2006. Right? But remember, as I mentioned a number of times, the IMF does not have any control over capital account transactions. The IMF has no regulation whatsoever. No regulation whatsoever regarding capital account transactions. That is to say, a country is free to impose any restrictions on capital account transactions. You do whatever you want. Right? Whatever you want. Right? So there's no legal obligation at all. Right? So that explains why there are so many capital account restrictions across the world. Right? So the members may exercise such controls as are necessary to regulate international capital movement. But you can't restrict payments for current transactions, for current transactions, right? So with that in mind, we will have a little discuss on financial liberalization. What's your understanding of financial liberalization? You might have heard this term many times everywhere. So financial liberalization here, financial liberalization here. What does it mean to you? Free exchange of what? That's financial liberalization to you, right? So they make renminbi a freely convertible currency, right? Okay. I mentioned this before. I think it's high time for me to explain to you another very important concept, the so-called hard currency. The hard currency is actually a legal concept, which means your currency is freely convertible to foreign currencies. So a country's currency is freely convertible to foreign currencies. This is the legal obligation. Remember, always the value of a currency depends on confidence in the government. Right? So the government has, whether a currency is convertible or not, does not depend on the size of your economy, does not depend on whether you are an advanced economy or not. It depends on whether your government has undertaken such an obligation, legal obligation, to convert your currency, to allow your currency to be converted to foreign currencies. This is a legal obligation. You understand this? This is not an economic term. This is a legal. Hard currency is a legal obligation. Hard currency means freely convertible currencies. In freely convertible currency. And why that is a legal obligation? Because, for example, Chinese economy is pretty large and it's pretty important, but renminbi is not a freely convertible currency, so it's not hard currency. Right? But for many small economies, they are not even as advanced as China, but their currencies are hard currencies. Right? Because behind the hard currency, there is a legal obligation for the government. Again, what is the legal obligation? It is the government undertakes to buy back the currency at any time. Buy back its own currency presented by foreign government, by foreign individuals at any time. Right? So whenever hard currency basically means whenever, for example, if renminbi becomes hard currency, then any time you present renminbi to the Chinese government, the Chinese government has the legal obligation to exchange this renminbi to either other hard currencies or gold or SDR. Right? So this is what hard currency means. It is a legal obligation. Legal obligation. This is not an economic term. Right? 所谓的硬通货不是一个。 不是一个经济词汇，它是一个法律词汇，这一点是非常重要，这一点一定要理解啊，一定要理解啊。那你所说的就是，so what financial liberalization sounds to you is that renminbi should be or the currency should be hard currency, right? Freely convertible currency. What else? Examples or description, whatever. What does financial liberalization mean to you?
People can lend it to the foreign current to a foreign country freely.
So people can remit, right? So you can send which currency, foreign currency or Chinese currency? Foreign currency, so you can take for example, if you have a lot of US dollar, you can take that to a foreign country.